All right. Today I'm speaking with an award-winning author. He's written plenty of books over the last 20 years. His name is Nick Jans, and he'll be presenting, pictures from throughout Southeast Alaska and from your book as well?
Yeah, I'll be combining both a slideshow and a reading, not only from my new book, The Glacier Wolf, which is about Southeast Alaska and life here, but also from some of my other works.
Now, before we get into your presentation, just tell us a little bit about yourself. Like, are you originally from Alaska?
You know, I would have been if I could have been, but I wasn't. I actually was the son of a career diplomat, and by the time I was 13, I'd only lived in the States 1 year. Went to junior high and high school in Washington, D.C. Went to college in Maine, and pretty much as soon as I got out, I headed for Alaska because that's where I always wanted to go, and it was just something that was in me. And by the time I was 24 years old, I was working for a big game guide and managing a trading post in the Brooks Range.
What attracted you to Alaska, to be exactly?
Well, the same things that are still around us. Big open space, intact ecosystems, you know, wolves and bears and caribou and Eskimos and big mountains and big rivers and the chance to travel that country. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to see that, and I wanted to be in the wildest place I could find on Earth.
Now, according to your website, you have lived in Ambler, Alaska, and you frequently go back to that place. Tell us about your experience in Ambler.
Well, Ambler is a little Inupiaq Eskimo village in the Northwest Arctic, and I first came there in 1979, floating down the river in a canoe with no money to go back home. So it was kind of predestined that I was going to be there for a while, and was looking for work and got offered a job working for this Dutch big game guide who was a bit of a pirate and managed his store and kind of pieced together a life. And I kind of invented it one day at a time and 1 month at a time. I ended up teaching school there and teaching Inupiaq kids for pretty close to 20 years. And what I did on weekends and whenever I had vacation time, instead of doing what most people did, which is got the hell out of there and went someplace else, I got the hell out into the country and pretty much worked on learning how to travel long distances with snow machine and with, you know, jet boats and on foot, and how to shoot things and take care of them and all that stuff. And I don't know, you know, as it is, life changes over time, and my perspectives have changed. I've traveled a long ways, and I guess over the course of my writing, which is, you could say it's autobiographical, but mostly I'm writing about things I saw, not really about myself. I'm just sort of a vehicle for describing the experiences in front of me so that other people can see them. But I've changed the same way you'd expect anyone who goes from being, you know, 20-something years old to being in their mid-50s, you know?
So now you live in Juneau.
I do.
And I'm sure you were pretty much heartbroken after leaving Ambler, you know, after 20 years. So how did that feel, just leave Ambler and going to Juneau?
Well, you know, mixed feelings. I still have a place up in Ambler, and that's actually where most of my outdoor equipment is. And I go back every year. I've never not gone back since I left, quote-unquote, 10 years ago. I've always been back there for at least a month or 6 weeks or 2 months. And it's still the place that feels like home. Home is something that chooses you, I think, more than anything else. And maybe Southeast would in time feel more like home, but as it is, I really love the country around here, and it's just different. You know, it's one of the many Alaskas. There isn't just one Alaska. We look out the window and say, well, I'm in Alaska. No, you're in one little piece of it. And if there's anything I've gotten out of my opportunities over about 30 years of traveling the state, and increasingly more and more, is that it's so big I can't imagine it, and there's so much of it I'll never see it all.
So what brought you to Juneau in Southeast region?
A cute little gal, about 5'3". That's what brought me to Juneau. It was one of those things. You get ambuscaded sometimes. And this gal I didn't know sent me a Christmas card 1 year. And 2 years later, I met her. was a friend of mine, a mutual friend of ours. I didn't know he was a friend of hers too, but was setting this up, and finally got around to meeting, and well, that was that. And it was time for a change in one respect, in that I wanted to see other places in Alaska. I wanted to sort of expand out of there. It didn't mean I knew I was leaving home, but I also knew I was coming back. I actually built a house there so that I could leave.
Wow.
You know, so that you'd have something to come back to.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had friends who, once they left, I mean, you're out in the middle of nowhere. You have to have your stuff there. You have to have your equipment, your sleds, your tents, your gear. Or when you leave, you can only come back as a visitor. Mm-hmm. You know? And still, it's the only place in the world when I get off the little mail plane onto that gravel runway. Whoever's there to meet the plane takes off their glove and sticks out their hand and says, "Welcome home."
Wow, that's very interesting. So now you're in the Southeast region.
Yep.
And you're going to share that with us tomorrow night. Talk about the presentation.
Well, I've been working the last 15 years with increasing seriousness as a professional photographer. And a big part of the presentation is just images of wildlife and landscapes in Southeast. And in my magazine work, I probably publish, I don't know, 20 magazine articles a year at least. The combination of my pictures and my writing go together. They complement each other. And I like to think that I paint pictures with words. And actually, my new book, The Glacier Wolf, doesn't have any pictures in it except for the one on the front cover. But the slideshow I'm going to present are the pictures that would go with the book if the book had pictures. But I'm also going to read from it, and I'm also going to read from the brand new novel I'm working on. It's the first novel I've ever worked on, and I'm at this stage of my writing career. It's a kind of a nervy thing. It's like switching over from classical to jazz, you know. It's a whole different genre, and that's going to be an interesting process. And I'm also going to read maybe a little bit from some of my early work from the days up north, and whatever else happens, you know. I don't ever have a script, and I kind of make it up as I go. I mean, I don't make up stuff to say, but I make up how the script for the evening goes, and it's partly audience participation, what questions people ask, and just sort of the direction things steer themselves.
Mm-hmm. Now, through your travels in Southeast, what's been the most interesting thing you have seen or written about?
Oh, that's impossible to single out one thing for me. I guess, in general, the thing that grips me the most is wildlife encounters. And the core of this book, The Glacier Wolf, are the stories of this 130-pound black wolf that showed up at our back door, literally, one day 8 years ago. And I actually, over the course of a number of years, got to know this wolf as an individual, and he played with our dogs and other people's dogs, and sort of became a celebrity, not sort of, really was a celebrity in Juneau until he disappeared this last September, and nobody knows exactly what happened to him, but I suspect some yahoo shot him finally, which would be about as challenging as shooting a dog.
That's, you know, you don't hear about that too much. You hear about,
yeah,
you know, wild wolves, you know, probably luring some, you know, domestic dogs into the wolves and,
oh,
killing,
yeah,
them. And but that's got to be, I don't know, were you pretty frightened when he came in the first time?
No, I spent 20 years in the Arctic around wolves. Okay. And tell you the truth, it's a predator, right? And a hungry wolf is quite different from, and a hungry pack of wolves is different from an individual wolf. He showed up, he was a 2-year-old. And a lot of the single wolves that you see anywhere in the state are 2-year-olds that break off from a pack, and they're sort of like 18-year-olds leaving home, and they're just looking for something. And it's actually quite common for those animals, single wolves, to be pretty social, including with dogs. This is not the first, by any means, encounter I know of wolves hanging around peacefully with dogs. Up in the Brooks Range, it was actually fairly common, some of my homesteader friends, to have a single wolf show up in the spring and hang around near the edge of their dog yard and not eat the dogs and not even steal their food, but be hanging around for the social action.
Well, we got a little bit into your book here, The Glacier Wolf. What else can we expect from the book?
Well, I guess there's three major threads. There's animal encounters. There's sort of adventure stories from travel in the country, everything from getting lost in the fog between Juneau and Hoonah to in a skiff to almost getting on the wrong plane, that being the one that went down, to jet boating up the Taku. That's a second major thread of these sort of adventure stories. A third one is just sort of slices of life in Southeast, like what it's about living in a rainforest, to people hitting that wall when they decide they've had enough of this place and they're getting out for one reason or another, to having living in a place where there's bears in your backyard, you know, on a pretty regular basis and accepting that as part of life. And then a fourth strain that goes through this are stories involving my wife, Sherry, who's a card-carrying member of PETA, of course. And here I was, an ex-packer for a big game guide who spent most of his adult life with Eskimo hunters. And her rescuing everything from hummingbirds to red squirrels to minks and bringing them into our house. And me having to deal with the aftermath, which is both an educational process and kind of broadened my perspectives. Like, for instance, who knew that porcupines are actually a very gentle, very social, and easy-to-handle little critter? Mm. You know, everyone thinks porcupines are a rodent. They're stupid. They're smelly. They're trying to quill you. And I got to meet a baby porcupine because of my wife, you know.
Oh, wow.
And not only that, but to have them around for a while. Mm-hmm. So it's things like that. That's another strain through the book. But the thing that really holds the whole book together is the recurring tale of Romeo the Black Wolf interacting with us, finally his story isn't really about him at all, but it's about people. And about our own willingness to tolerate wildlife. And if a wolf can't live in the Tongass National Forest in Alaska without us tolerating that, I don't know where he can live in this world.
Wow. Well, is there anything else you'd like to say about your presentation or your book?
Shucks, I don't know. One thing is that, you know, most people who go to my readings have been to things like that before, but I have people who are dragged along by some spouse or something like that, or a boyfriend or girlfriend. They said, I had no idea this was going to be fun. You know, people think about book readings as being this stuffy thing. I like to have fun. I like to have a sense of humor about things. And above all, my goal as a writer is to entertain people. If they're not entertained, why the hell would they want to read my stuff?
All right. Thanks, Nick, for coming in.
You bet.